the studios of 2RPH in Sydney. This is Richard Lyon, and you're with 30 Laps with Dick. Welcome to this week. We're all about repetition this week, not like 007, although he will come, but not today. It's just plain repetition. Like Fooey Fooey Moi Moi, that great Tongan prop from the NRL, or Lulu, the great British writer, Jerome K. Jerome, or even Barney's son Bam Bam, or Rin Tin Tin, or, in our motoring sphere, Keke Rosberg, or Toto Wolf. How about that great character from Goodfellas, Johnny Two Times? I'll get the papers, get the papers. Where the heck is this leading to? This week in 30 Laps. Well, I'm glad you asked that question. Closer to home, a Vietnamese businessman has bought the Holden testing ground at Lang Lang in Victoria. So we're going to check that out. Eat my dust. We take the new Aston Martin SUV for a spin in the dirt. Plus, motoring by subscription. Those new buzzwords. Let's check that out as well. This week. Okay, to get things started, we go to drive.com.au. On the 10th of September 2020, and an article by Joshua Dowling. A relatively unknown startup car company called VinFast, owned by one of Vietnam's richest men, has been confirmed as the new owner of Holden's historic test track. The General Motors Proving Ground in Lang Lang on the southeastern outskirts of Melbourne has been the birthplace of every Holden since 1958, and now will be used as a test track to develop vehicles by a foreign car maker for the Asia-Pacific region. Drive previously reported that VinFast was the likely buyer, outbidding transport magnate Lindsay Fox, who owns a vehicle testing site in Anglesey, southwest of Geelong. According to a report today by the Reuters news agency, VinFast did not provide a value on the deal, but Drive understands it was in excess of $20 million US. I beg your pardon, Australian. VinFast had been hiring former engineers from Holden, Ford and Toyota to work on the new vehicles. Initially, VinFast vehicles would be based on a previous generation BMW models, bought under license from the German manufacturer, but they will have a unique design. A local environmental group near Lang Lang had lobbied local council and state and federal governments to set aside a large portion of the former Holden test track site for preservation. Approximately half of the 872 hectare facility has been undisturbed since 1958 and has a unique species of flora and fauna. A spokesman for the Save Holden Bushlands group wants the new owners of the facility to be compelled to preserve the eastern half of the site, which has been largely untouched for more than 60 years. Local wildlife authorities have been granted access over the years to study changes in the site's flora and fauna. A statement issued by Holden said VinFast was committed to the ongoing protection of the local bushland and environment, and it intends to continue to allow access for community land care activities. VinFast also intends to honour Holden's heritage at the iconic site by allowing access for Holden car clubs and former employee open days, the Holden statement continued. Under the agreement, General Motors specialty vehicles will continue to access the Lang Lang site for testing and engineering validation for new products in local conditions. VinFast already has links to General Motors, having secured a partnership to distribute Chevrolet models in Vietnam, and it is due to take ownership of the former GM factory in South Korea. And that was a little bit on the new owners of the Lang Lang circuit in Victoria. It was written by Joshua Dowling, and it was from drive.com.au on the 10th of September 2020. And now we turn our sights on the new Aston Martin, something we can just dream about, I think, here on 30 Laps. Yes, it's a strange world. We look at this. It's written by Toby Hagen, and it appeared in the autumn edition of Executive Style magazine. Eat my dust, it says, the first Aston Martin SUV to be put to the test on rocky terrain in Oman. Toby writes, it's a luxury SUV, priced from $357,000, but right now the digital dashboard on my Aston Martin DBX is flashing warnings like a pinball machine that's just ejected a ball from an otherwise certain jackpot. As well as airbags and headlights, a fast flickering assortment of orange and red messages suggests the tyres are flat and the brake assist system has given up. Fortunately, the brakes are still working. The Pirelli rubber is inflated, and there is a perfectly valid explanation for the quasi-disco of messages. The dusty, well-travelled car I'm driving is a prototype that's been through a life of punishment to ensure issues like this aren't experienced once cars start rolling out of the dealerships in mid-2020. As I slither through the rock-strewn gorge in the Middle Eastern nation of Oman, it's clear there are many more kilometres of punishment yet for this car. I can't pass this up. You've got to quote that great line from the late 1960s science fiction blockbuster book, Dune, hey? Stranger in a Strange Land. Well, that's a track called Stranger from a Strange Land, but I digress, as per usual, I guess, on this show. Anyway, Aston Martin chief engineer Matt Becker reassures me these cars are only the beginning of their usual life, likely to end up in a crusher once done or morphed into something else for a future project. These cars will be very, very, very heavily used, he says, adding the development program for DBX is bigger than the British manufacturer has embarked on previously. It involved testing across the world with the last blast in the dust of Oman. The DBX is the first SUV from the brand best known for keeping Super Spy 007 in a suitably swanky set of wheels. While Aston Martin has been relatively sluggish to the SUV party, it insists there are advantages to being able to analyse the entrants from rivals as diverse as Volkswagen, BMW, Porsche, Bentley and Lamborghini. The team's respect level for these cars went up exponentially in terms of how much range of capability these cars have had and what's expected of them, says Becker. It prompted a rethink of how the sports car maker developed cars. Suddenly, having to test off-road and ensure the DBX could tow as well as being sporty, fast and fun. It doesn't take many corners to establish driving enjoyment is the target of the DBX. The steering on our car lacks feel. That's one of the many parameters to undergo final tuning before production begins in April. But it's satisfyingly direct, and what's going on at ground level suggests the team of engineers under Becker have achieved their goal. It's not about to reset any fast SUV benchmarks. Lamborghini has that one licked, but the DBX is very much in the hunt. The throaty burble of the V8 and the intelligent apportioning of grunt, ensuring rapid progress. Plus, it makes some lovely noises, although Becker is intent on making things meaner. More impressive is the way the DBX devours bumps, even in its most aggressive Sports Plus mode. The triple chamber air suspension is respectably compliant, more so if you're driving gently, at which a point a computer ignores the request for firmness and instead relaxes things. It's all about maximising the everyday usability, because for a car like this, why would you want to be uncomfortable in it? Reasons Becker. And while there are Aston Martin staples, the push-button gear selects on the dash and the beautifully stitched leather lacing on the seats, there's also genuine usefulness elsewhere, such as the deep centre console and backrests that dish up loads of headroom. It's a comfortable space, yet one that lives up to promise and character and X factor. All of which adds a new dimension to a brand that's known its beauty as much as brawn. A stranger in a strange land, indeed. But back to Earth. So thanks, Toby Hagen, for that look through the front window of the new Aston Martin DBX. It's on sale now at $357,000. It's got a 4-litre twin-turbo V8, power-torque 9-speed auto, 4-wheel drive, 0 to 100 kilometres an hour in 4.5 seconds. Crikey. Try doing that in your Holden Commodore station wagon. But back to subscriptions. Now, what's this all about? Well, let's have a look, shall we? This is by John Mellor from the 14th of September 2020 from the magazine, the weekly online magazine Auto Action. I beg your pardon, Go Auto. Sorry, John. The online magazine Go Auto. Subscriptions appeal to part-time workers. People who feel more vulnerable at work are more likely to favour the idea of car subscriptions. The flexibility of owning a car by subscribing to the use of it is continuing to appeal to people in the workforce whose tenure in their jobs may not be as secure as with full-time employment. More and more people are alerted to the possibility of having all the expenses of owning a car paid for, except fuel, in one monthly fee package, with the added advantage of handling the car back with 1 month's notice without penalty if they are laid off. They are finding the concept increasingly attractive compared with the complicated and expensive process of quitting a car that is subject to a finance or lease deal over years. Carly, Australia's first flexible car subscription provider, is saying that car subscription is emerging as a genuine alternative to car purchase and leasing across the country, with almost 4 in 10 Australians, 38%, now considering subscribing to a car. The company says that the impact of COVID-19 on the economy has many Australians reconsidering their financial commitments and how they can de-risk their finances. The shift has been found to be more prevalent in part-time workers. New research commissioned by Carly surveyed more than 1,200 Australians, and it has found that with the current upheaval in the Australian economy, 48% of part-time workers would consider car subscription instead of buying. This shift towards subscription is more prevalent in part-time workers, where 48% are now considering car subscription compared to full-time workers at 44%, or people not working at all, 28%. Nearly 70% of the 18 to 34-year-olds would consider car subscription, with a preference for a no-strings-attached subscription option, suggesting it is an attractive to those either young or currently studying. Part-time workers face difficulty securing finance for a car, especially those who are currently being paid under JobKeeper. Carly says that subscription can circumnavigate that obstacle with minimum risk and no need for a deposit. Carly's research found that 48% of those considering car subscription have either a university degree or are currently studying at university. Of the 31% of Australians currently extremely or very worried about their financial situation due to the pandemic, 46% would consider car subscription and 24% are more likely to choose it now. Carly said in a statement, part-time workers face difficulties securing finance for a car, especially those who are currently being paid under JobKeeper. I think she might be repeating herself, Carly, here. Hang on a minute. Yeah, that's interesting. Anyway, two key features are capped cost and no deposit make it financially viable for part-time workers to have access to a car without the risks associated with being locked into a lease or a loan. Carly CEO Chris Noon said, car subscription is a serious consideration for many Australians at the moment as they look at different ways to access a car in light of COVID-19. For more Australians than ever, a subscription model presents a familiar and risk-free alternative to big financial outlay, and our figures support this with a 43% increase in subscriptions in June versus March in 2020. Carly cited the case of a Sydney-based part-time retail worker and university graduate, Sophia Phillips. The 23-year-old found herself without a car when her vehicle was suddenly recalled due to faulty airbags at the beginning of March. At the same time, her retail shifts were being cut due to the pandemic, so she wasn't in a financial position to commit to purchasing a car. Miss Phillips wanted to avoid public transport but still needed to get to work, go to the gym and meet with friends. For Miss Phillips, a car subscription was the perfect solution. I rely heavily on my car, especially when I'm travelling to and from work, she said. My hours vary each week, working in retail, and while I'm not always travelling in peak hour, I still do not want to be taking public transport if I can avoid it. I think a lot of people would still prefer to drive, so Carly is one way you can do it without the long-term financial commitment or worry about hidden costs, as everything like rego, insurance, maintenance and roadside assistance is included. It makes managing a budget very easy, Miss Phillips said. So there you go. That's what car subscription is all about. Sounds like a pretty good idea to me. That was from the 14th of September 2020 edition of Go Auto online news publication, and it was written by John Miller. Because let's face it, folks, this week it sure has been a hard rain is going to fall. That should be year, actually, not just week. Oh, dear. A different version of an old classic, if ever there was one, from the late great Leon Russell. Anyway, look, we'll stick with Go Auto, and Neil Dowling, who's writes for Go Auto as well as Drive, he's talking about an old site that I think we should have a look at. It's only a little short one, so let's see what this is all about. The site has sold Fords since 1924. AAG, which is the big Australian automotive group, is to retire the 36-year-old Brad Garlick name and relocate its Ryde showroom. One of Sydney's oldest Ford dealerships, Brad Garlick Ford and Ryde, is to be closed and relocated, with the long-standing name also disappearing. The site on Blaxland Road has been selling Ford cars since 1924. First as a car yard and then from 1932 as an official Ford dealership, owned by the prominent car dealer Jack R. Englert, 1899 to 1981. In 1984, it was taken over by its namesake, automotive businessman Brad Garlick, and became the part of the Australian Auto Group, AAG, in 2017. AAG, which is owned by South African industrial company Motus, formerly Imperial Holdings, will, from the 1st of October, move into the Brad Garlick assets under the City Ford name and relocate next door to Victoria Road. The Victoria Road site currently is AAG's Isuzu, Ute and Hyundai showroom, but Go Auto News understands the Isuzu showroom will be closed to make way for the Ford franchise. The Brad Garlick Ford showroom, which was renovated in 2017, is not expected to continue as a car dealership and is expected to be sold. Near City Ride has increasingly been sought after by property developers building apartments. Ford Australia spokesman Matt Moran said there would be no change to the service facility in the Hope Street and Melrose Park, nor the Smart Lab new vehicle showcase sales facility at Macquarie Shopping Centre Ride. So there you go, folks. There's a little story there by Neil Dowling out of Go Auto News. And if you've gone up and down Victoria Road in Sydney, as I have done for many, many years, that familiar site is going to change. And if you continue up the road towards Parramatta, you'll see that there are many, many new units being built there. And I guess this Ford dealership site will join the maddening throng. Yes, indeed it is. To change the subject completely, which we do quite a bit in this show, let's go back to some of these iconic car colour schemes of history from Auto Magazine on the 9th of April 2020. We've already done a couple in past episodes. British Racing Green, Golf Racing, Ferrari, why was that red? The Audi Quattro. And today, let's have a look at the Lancia, that lovely little Lancia. The Lancia Delta Martini. This is an article, or was an article, that was written by Al Sutty. There's a long line of cars that have sported the Martini red, white and blue livery, but few are as evocative as the Lancia Delta that took on the world's rally stages. During the infamous Group B era and Group A period that followed, the Delta's squared-off styling lent itself to showing off its sponsor's colours to perfection. The Delta wasn't Martini's first foray into rallying, as it backed Porsche in 1978. Yet it was the venture with fellow Italian company Lancia that garnered Martini the global exposure it wanted, with the first Lancia 037 and then the hugely successful Delta in all its forms. It made household names of the likes of Didier Eroli, Juha Kankunin and Marco Allen. Well, at least in Europe they did anyway. How about the beautiful Lotus JPS, hey? This is a favourite of mine. Lotus was no stranger to the iconic colour schemes of its race cars, from the early British Racing Green with a yellow stripe to the gold leaf colours used in the late 1960s. There's one, though, that stands out above all others, and it's the John Player Special black and gold livery. That Formula One, Lotus cars sported between 1972 and 1978. In an era where tobacco money was prevalent in Formula One, and everywhere else for that matter, Lotus took it to an all-new level by flogging merchandise to fans. The company plane was decked out in black and gold, and you could also buy an Esprit road car in the team colours. It shows how far ahead company boss Colin Chapman was when it came to branding and understanding the impact of a great livery and what that would have on the sport and the public. And the third one of the troika is the Mini Cooper S. The British Motor Corporation, BMC, has been using a white roof over a red body for its Austin Healey rally cars, but it took a while to adopt the livery for the iconic Mini Cooper S rally machine. The first instance of a Cooper S in this colour scheme came from a keen competitor, Bill Rogers. After loaning his Mini to a friend, it came back damaged, and the paint shop, offered to respray the roof a different colour to the red body. Rogers asked for white, as this would help reflect heat from the cabin. BMC used the red and white colour scheme from 1962, and also used red and black roof. The red colour was chosen, according to legend, because cars in that colour were more likely to be waved on by police officers during rallies through European countries. How about that? It must have been a while ago. Early 60s, yeah, I guess. The little note about Parmalade has been shoved under the door sill, so let's have a look at that. For a company that made its money in the food and dairy business like Italy's Parmalade had, a huge influence on Formula One with its blue and white colours. Like so many of the best liveries, it was a simple design that made it stand out. Even so, it was 2 years after Parmalee had started to sponsor Brabham that its iconic colours appeared in 1980 when Alfa Romeo departed. The design that emerged in 1980 quickly claimed as well plenty of television coverage, as Nelson Piquet used the Gordon Murray-designed BT49 to great effect. With BMW engines arriving in 1982, the colours were adapted into the Brabham's nose cone to replicate the kidney grille of BMW road cars. There we go. Nelson Piquet did use it to great effect. I think he was world champion that year. Formula One world champion, that is. And one of the coolest names in motorsport. So that's about all we got time for this week, I think. I'd like to thank you for your company. I'd like to thank Leon Russell and his band of renown, the late Leon Russell, for a bit of a nose into a couple of his old tunes. We talked about the iconic colour schemes in history. We had a drive in an Aston Martin in the desert in Oman. I told you what's happening to that Brad Garlick Ford site. Next time you are drive past or are driven past, you'll wonder, you'll know, 30 laps told me what that's all about. I can safely drive on to Parramatta. And we looked at the subscription cars, what that's all about, and the double words of Lang Lang with Fui Fui Moi Moi and Bam Bam and Rin Tin Tin and wonderful Johnny Two Times. So we covered it all, I think. I hope you had a pleasant half an hour. I hope you can join me next week. Until then, bye for now.